And live from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Good afternoon. The shuttered Gross Alaska Theater building in downtown Juneau is poised to get a new life. It's home to 22 new apartments. Last night, the Juneau Assembly voted unanimously to approve $1 million loan to help the developer renovate the former movie theater on Front Street into an apartment complex. The money comes from the city's Affordable Housing Fund. The city created the fund to address the lack of affordable housing and uses the money to create more rental housing and single-family homes. Zachary Cohan is a co-partner of Broco Holdings, the developer.
I grew up going to that theater with my friends in middle school. It's a fixture of downtown, and to have the ability to potentially bring that back is exciting. And to have the city behind us is very exciting.
Reviving the theater building into new housing has been an idea circulating for at least a decade, but it hasn't come together until now. The building used to have two retail storefronts, the theater and apartments, but the apartments have been out of commission since the 90s, and the theater itself was shut down during the pandemic. Kenny Solomon Gross, the vice president and general manager at Gross Alaska Theaters, says the cost to revive the apartments was always too much for his family business to take on.
Speaking for my family, we are really excited that the Gross building is going to come back to life again. And for them to be able to get that loan, you know, to be able to make those apartments again come back to life, we are super excited about that.
Loans from the Affordable Housing Fund are just one way the Assembly is incentivizing developers to construct more affordable housing. Cohan says the funds are crucial to helping the company take on the project. 20 of the apartments will be rented as affordable units as part of the loan requirements. The plan is to offer 16 one-bedroom and 6 two-bedroom apartments at the site. Cohan says the company is still finalizing the building purchase. You're listening to KTOO. Mendenhall Valley homeowners are divided on the city's plan to hold back glacial outbursts. Nearly 24 residents shared public testimony at Monday night's assembly meeting. While some championed the city's plan, others expressed frustration and anger over its costs and rollout. KTOO's Anna Canny has the story.
Mendenhall Valley residents will soon vote on the City and Borough of Juneau's plan to install flood barriers along the Mendenhall River. The proposed ordinance has received mixed reception from homeowners in flood-prone neighborhoods. Some say they feel forced into a flood-fighting plan they're unhappy with. But supporters like Brandy Tolsma see the plan as the best way to safeguard homes. Tolsma's home on Sharon Street was among the nearly 300 properties that were damaged during August's record-breaking glacial outburst.
Over 4.5 months later, my family and I are still piecing our home back together, trying to rebuild what we lost. This choice is clear. These barriers are not a permanent fix. They're a bridge to a more comprehensive solution.
Glacial outburst floods have become an annual occurrence each summer in Juneau, but floods in 2023 and 2024 were uniquely catastrophic. Floodfighting experts with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers recommended the military-grade HESCO brand flood barriers for short-term floodfighting. The city says they're the only means of flood prevention that could be quickly implemented before the next flood comes. Installing them will cost nearly $8 million. Some of that cost would be covered by taxpayers at large, but the rest would be split among residents of nearly 500 flood-prone homes. Those homeowners will weigh in on the plan over the next 6 weeks. Many, like Molly Zaleski of Meander Way, say they'll object.
I feel like if you guys want to push forward with the HESCO barriers, then the city should pay for it.
The cost has been a sticking point in the plan's rollout. The original proposal was a 50-50 split between the city and homeowners, a scheme which would have cost each household $8,000. On Monday, the Assembly decided that the city will take on more of the cost, which brings the household payment down to just over $6,000. Still, some people said they'd vote against the project, even if it was free. They raised a variety of objections, including concerns about the sacrifice of personal property and fear that the installation of barriers might distract from a more long-term solution. Riverfront homeowners like John Cooper of Meander Way would have to host the flood barriers on their private property for up to 10 years. Cooper says he's okay with that, but he's hopeful that a more permanent fix will come along before then.
But it isn't going to happen by next summer. I'm going to have to move my fences. I'm going to have to move a woodshed. But I'm ready to do that for the good of the other people that are inside of this flood area.
City officials say they're committed to finding a long-term solution next. That means stopping the flooding at the source. The city has already set aside money to explore proposals to drain Suicide Basin or construct a levee around Mendenhall Lake. But city manager Katie Kester said a long-term fix won't come quickly.
Large, expensive projects take a long time to
design, engineer, and most importantly, find funding for.
The barrier plan, Kester said, has been rolled out rapidly because the flood could return with similar or stronger force next summer. Kester said failure to take immediate action in the next 6 months could jeopardize federal support for flood fighting in the future. And in previous meetings and project planning documents, the city has stated that it would not have time to pursue alternative flood fighting projects if the barrier plan fails to pass. Sam Hatch, who also lives on Meander Way, said that the stance has contributed to anger and resistance from homeowners across the Mendenhall Valley. Hatch said he's supportive of short-term flood fighting, but he'll refuse to host the flood barriers on his riverfront property. And he doesn't like the pressure to pass the ordinance, also known as the LID.
Right now, I can tell you a large number of people feel bullied and threatened by how the city administration is conducting itself during the rush to push this through. If the LID fails, will the city and assembly take no action, as these documents indicate, and abandon our neighborhoods to the floodwaters?
Whether the city tries the barrier plan or not is all up to Hatch and the 465 other homeowners. They'll receive a ballot in the mail this week. They must object in writing by the assembly meeting on February 3rd, or they'll be considered in favor of the plan. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
You're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Oncologist Dr. Paul Wyden has been treating patients with cancer in Southeast Alaska for 23 years. Now he's retiring at 83 years old. Every month, he would travel to Juneau to see his patients, who might have otherwise flown to Seattle to see a specialist. He also provided remote care for patients in other Southeast communities. And although he's seen access improve over the years, he says that there are still gaps.
I'm Paul Wyden. I'm a physician, a medical oncologist, hematologist, and I have come to Juneau monthly to see folks up here since November of 2001. In the 20 years prior to that, I was at Virginia Mason. And we saw a lot of patients who came from Southeast Alaska, particularly Juneau, to Seattle, particularly to Virginia Mason, for care for cancer. So the folks that bothered me most were the patients at the end of life who'd been treated up here and would come down to see if there was anything more that could be done. And they'd come with the patient and the family, often spending their last resources, monetary resources, energy resources, psychological resources, to come down and almost always for me to say, you know, you've had pretty good treatment up there in Juneau or Wrangell or wherever you were, and there's really nothing more that could or should be done. So when I left Virginia Mason, I said, you know, I don't need to have those folks come down here. I can go up there if I have a patient in Sitka or Wrangell or Skagway or whatever. We do telemedicine unless they need to come to Juneau for the radiology facilities that are here. There are more towns in Southeast Alaska now that are able to do that, but it stretches their resources because not so much the administration of the chemotherapy. That's not so hard. But it's the complications of the chemotherapy that occur unexpectedly between the times a patient gets chemotherapy. And that's a lot of responsibility for somebody in, let's say, in Skagway or Wrangell or Petersburg, where there are limited resources. So that is still a tension. But on the other hand, I think that problem is better solved by us here in Juneau being the center hub than trying to do it when I was in practicing in Seattle. You know, I didn't really understand where the hell Skagway was in relation to Juneau. So now I have a pretty good understanding of where everything is and can work with the patient and the family and the whatever local medical facility is in that town to see what's reasonable to do. You know, you also understand that a patient from Skagway can get to Juneau pretty reliably in the summer, but come winter, you know, it's a little dicey. So, you know, as I say, it's rare that a patient really needs to, let's say, get the hell out of town to get good care. And there are two or three patients over these 20 years that I really struggled to get out of town today, and not only get out of town, but to go somewhere where they would be taken care of that night. And there are at least two that come to mind who, if, you know, I hadn't seen them on the day that I saw them and made the diagnosis and understood the situation, if they'd called the University of Washington or Virginia Mason and said, I'm sick, they get an appointment for 2 weeks later or even a week later, they'd be dead. That's rare. I mean, it's good television drama, but it's actually very rare. And I can think of two in 20 years where that's it. Now, I've probably forgotten two, but it's not tens or 20s. It's single digits of patients where that kind of encounter is a difference between life and death. And if I go back to like the 30, 40 years before 2000, there are also two or three patients in my career where I can think on this day I made the difference between life and death. It's rare, but it is, you know, extraordinarily exciting and rewarding.
That was Dr. Paul Wyden, who's been treating cancer patients in Southeast Alaska for 23 years. His retirement party is this Thursday at 5 p.m. at Amalga Distillery.